Welcome, listeners, to episode 4 of Film Club, where we're back once again after taking a little week off. But don't worry, because we're going to more than make up for it this week, because we're venturing out into the woods where all manner of evil things and naughty trees and demons are playing outside in the mist. Of course, if you listen to the last episode, you will know that this week we are chopping up the cult classic horror film from Sam Raimi, Evil Dead, which was our public pick, which we picked out of our very high-tech machinery.
We did.
So yeah, Evil Dead. It's a film that I think I would say, I'm going to make a bold statement, I would say most people have seen Evil Dead at least once.
I think I'd be surprised if most film buffs haven't checked out the Evil Dead yet, because it is such an influential horror film, and it's one that, as far as this genre goes, most people hail this as one of the masterpieces. So I think, yeah, I think that's a pretty good statement, really. It's bold, but I think you're pretty spot on. I think most people will have seen The Evil Dead. And if not, what's wrong with you? Go out and check it out and come back and listen to us talk about it.
Exactly. If you haven't gone and checked it out yet, then, you know, you probably will want to put this on pause. Go watch it and then check it out, because as usual, there will be spoilers abound. So if you haven't seen it, go do that and then come back and then let us know what you think of the movie as well. Speaking of the movie, you've seen this before prior to watching it, no doubt.
Yes, I have. This is maybe the third time I've seen it now.
I think it's about the same for me. I think it was about my third viewing as well. Does it still hold up for you?
It does, absolutely. I mean, even the third time round, you just get a sense that this is a horror film that, for all its low budget kind of aesthetics and the fact that it is very dated in a way, I think still holds up in terms of its influence. Like, the things that it does in this film are things that I think are going to be seen in horror films for years and years and years to come.
I think part of the dated look of it and the kind of sort of scrappy aesthetics, I actually think it kind of adds to the film's charm, because it's kind of one of those films which clearly you can tell was done on a very tight budget and was done like on a wish and a prayer, and it's kind of for anybody who's ever sort of had any interest in how films are made or has had any interest in making films, it's one of those particular flicks in which you kind of like to watch, because it's like, yeah, somebody has kind of just bit the bullet, gone out there, used whatever they could and made this film. You know, there's very much this sort of underdog spirit about it.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, that's kind of a testament to Sam Raimi himself, really, because part of what makes Evil Dead such a great film is the camera work and the editing that goes into it, as opposed to, you know, the special effects or anything like that. And he's able to do so much with this film based on the very few things that he has. And I mean, like you said, Mel, it's a testament to what people can do with just an idea and the ambition to go out and just, you know, go and make it, even without the money that others may have.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, as I said, it's definitely something that I think adds to the charm. It's something that I find definitely adds to the atmosphere, because I don't know about you, but the fact that it looked really kind of shoddy and scrappy looking actually makes it, for some reason, much more frightening and kind of creepy in places.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things like that really adds to the horror in this film is that kind of grimy, gritty, kind of dirty imagery that goes with the surrounding of this cabin in the woods. And, you know, if it had this really pristine, glossy kind of shine about it, I don't think you'd feel that kind of, you know, dirtiness or grittiness that the film has that really adds to its atmosphere. And yeah, I think, like you said, I mean, the fact that it is dated almost does add to that kind of charm and the, you know, to the imagery of the film.
It's something that's always appealed to me, because it kind of, it shows that Raimi obviously took what he had and kind of used what would be, for a lot of filmmakers, a negative and used it as a positive. I mean, there are things in the film which are kind of bad, I will admit. Like, one thing I noted is that the acting is really hammy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Bruce Campbell's performance is actually okay. For what it is. The others that surround him are terrible. I mean, they're awful performances.
But the thing is, again, it kind of just plays into, I don't know what it is, it just seems right. It would seem wrong if everyone gave like a stellar performance.
Exactly.
You know, it kind of feels like a film that needs to have that amount of sort of hammy acting, and I kind of feel like it has become very much a sort of softener for a lot of films that don't work in that sense. A lot of films which do have really bad acting, I think it kind of softens the blow for a certain amount of films.
Yeah, I see. No, I see what you mean. Like, another thing about The Evil Dead is the fact that, it's one of the first horror films that kind of blended the idea of terrifying you with the idea of really kind of deliriously entertaining you. Like, as much as it is a horror film set in the horror genre, it's very tongue in cheek and as much a kind of film that you can sit back and put your feet up and really enjoy the hell out of, Scaring you isn't its top priority. I think
No.
entertaining you is its top priority. And the fact that it is kind of hammy and got these cheesy kind of silly moments, and I noticed a ton of goofs when I watched this watched this time around. Like, continuity errors like are all over the place. They
Really?
almost oh yeah. I mean, some of the first scenes when they get to the cabin, I noticed a couple of continuity errors, like within the first few minutes of them arriving. But it almost adds to the charm of it, The fact that it is kind of silly and off the cuff and, just it's kind of just not particularly, I think when horror films leading up to The Evil Dead were so well made, Like, you had things like, for example, Rosemary's Baby and things like that, and the horror movies around the corner, like The Shining, were coming out, and something that was so kind of, kind of thrown at the wall haphazardly and made in this kind of guerrilla style in which things aren't perfect and are kind of choppy, and like you said, the performances aren't very good. I think it's quite a charming aspect of The Evil Dead, the fact that it's not perfect,
Yeah, it's something that definitely wins you around, and when I say what I'm about to say, I don't mean it in a negative way at all. I mean it in a very loving and endearing way, but it's kind of like watching a film that maybe a friend has made, you know, like a bunch of friends that have gone out and kind of made this film. And I mean that in an endearing way. I don't mean it's terrible because it's a great film, but it just kind of has a very personable charm to it because of the way it's it, the way it, one, the way it works from start to finish, and just the way it's executed, you know.
Absolutely. It kind of feels like an underdog, the film. Like,
Yeah.
the fact that it is such a cheap movie that aims so high, you even from like the first few frames, you're kind of rooting it for it to be good,
And the thing is, it's something that really, in principle, shouldn't have done very well at all. One, because of, you know, it's not the most polished film. And, you know, at that era of time, horror films kind of were like a very much a bread and butter for sort of cult cinema. You know, it was something that people, I mean, like it is now, but I mean, it kind of hit a sort of high point at that. Where people were just sort of really invested in that genre, and here comes this very sort of scruffy around the edges kind of tacked together film, and particularly the content, like it's been like what 31 years or so since the film was released. I still find it one of the grossest experiences I've ever seen, with all the blood and the pus and just all the nasty stuff. And you know, I was reading that it's deemed as for our international listeners, the UK tabloids had a whale of a time back in the day hailing films as video nasties, and
Yes,
apparently
yeah.
this was one of the first films to get labelled a video nasty. And it's understandable because it is nasty, it's
It's
gross.
a nasty, nasty piece of filmmaking, isn't it?
Yeah. But it shouldn't work on that level, and it shouldn't have worked back then, you know. But it did, and you kind of that's where the underdog spirit kind of comes from. It's the fact that here's this little film that really should have just came out, not made any noise at all, really. Well, maybe a little bit of noise and then died out pretty quickly because people were either just not interested in the way it was put together or just turned off by its uber grossness.
Yeah,
But
exactly.
people embraced it, and it's just one of those kind of things that it really is the definition of a sort of cult classic to me.
It is. And just going back to the video nasties thing, it's a really interesting little topic that, because basically the term came about when it was sort of around the time that videotapes were made available. You didn't just have to watch a film in a cinema or in a theater. You could own it at home. And at the time, there wasn't really any regulation. on like what went to video, and so people kind of, it was sort of a free-for-all period for like a lot of filmmakers to just kind of go out and do like the most grotesque, gross stuff that they could. And The Evil Dead was sort of the defining video nasty, as it were. In fact, I think it got hauled before a UK court at one point because, like, a lot of people became, I began to question whether what it was doing was that, like, that shocking that it could potentially harm people. And, like, I think that's one of the things about the film that, you know, makes it such an interesting piece of cinema, the fact that it is still to this day such a gross, bloody, kind of grotesque piece of filmmaking. And it's the kind of thing that sets it apart from the horror films that came before. You know, it wasn't, like I said about Rosemary's Baby, like, that was a film that was very pristine and very, you know, it had more of an emotional impact on you, whereas this one has a very physical impact on you. As you see all these kind of dismembered bodies and decaying corpses, and you have, like, self-mutilation and people having their eyes gouged out, and it makes you feel this real kind of physical, like, agitation, you know, in a way that horror films before it weren't able to do. And so back in, like, the early 80s when this came out, I think it was the early 80s, wasn't it?
I believe it was 81, if I'm not 81. Mistaken. Yeah.
I mean, at the time, like, imagine, it can still shock us now, like, 30 years ago. Imagine the effect it's had on people. And it's an interesting aspect of the film, the fact that it was so controversial when it came out.
I think you've really kind of encapsulated what I think the film does so well to its merit, is that, you know, the horror comes, it's a very sensory experience, you know, because you do kind of have to, at points, just look away, and, you know, I might get called a big crybaby for this, but I just, even now, there's just bits where I'm like, oh, that's too much, I can't look at that, that's gross. Like, just the pus and stuff, and all the bodily fluids, and just, it's disgusting. But it's kind of brilliant in its own strange, unique way. But yeah, it's a very sensory kind of film, where, you know, Rosemary's Baby is a perfect sort of counteracting example, because that's a very, like you say, it's a very emotionally invested film. It's kind of like a psychological breakdown of someone, and it's a very slow burning film, which has a real sort of grainy but yet sort of almost sanitary aesthetic, whereas this is, it just kind of hits you hard, and it hits you constantly, and it does make you just kind of, like you said, very sort of physically agitated when you watch it.
Yeah, but it's also mentioning how foreboding the film can be, you know, like, the whole setting is this really kind of creepy backdrop for violence to play out on as well. And I think that, as much as, like, the pus and the blood and the dismemberment is disgusting, like, that backdrop adds to shock as much as any of that, you know, like, it's, again, it's this very grimy and dirty and isolated place, and, you know, I think it all adds to the experience while you're watching it.
I would definitely, I mean, there is a definite creepy sort of eerie atmosphere simply because of the location, and the location, it really is kind of key to the film. This is something I don't think we've actually talked about in terms of any of the films we've discussed so far, but I think location with The Evil Dead is really pivotal, because the thing that I notice each and every time is the opening shot of the film, and it's that sort of free-flowing first-person camera through, like, the murky sort of misty swamps, and straight away it just puts you at unease, because you know that this is not a good place, this is not somewhere you want to be, and you know that at some point there is going to be something horrible lurking out of the trees. And at one point, it is the trees themselves.
That's true, yeah. Those POV shots are great in a film. And, like, one of the things that's really cool about them is the fact that the way that they're done, like, you never get a feeling that this demon's in one place, you know? And it's something that kind of surrounds this cavern. And, like, while other horrors since have occasionally had these moments where you're like, don't go to there, you idiot, like, the monsters are, like, through all this kind of eerie imagery, like, it literally surrounds you, and when, like, Ash turns a corner, for example, you don't know if there's going to be something there or not, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, like, no,
it's all kind of, I don't know, the way that Raimi does it, and with that location, with all the fog, like, you really kind of feel that these characters are trapped, and, like, again, that is something that really adds to the horror of this film, the fact that the kind of these characters are pretty futile in the face of what is going to of what is kind of lurking at this cabin in the woods, you know?
Well, it, like you're saying, I mean, for that first establishing shot with the POV shot, it really, you do get the sense that straight away, even if you have no idea what's about to come, you know that there's just something horrible. And you're so right, because just the way free-flowing movement of the camera, it does feel like it's surrounding the whole entire cabin. It kind of feels like, almost like the actual setting is a character in itself. And like I say, obviously at one point it does become like a character when the trees do a bit of tree rape, which is again another strange element into the film. But that in itself is just really creepy, the fact that there is not just something that you can't escape, but there is somewhere you can't escape as well.
Exactly. I mean, you have that scene as well where the drive trying to get away, and Ash basically attempts to drive out of the woods, only to see that the bridge has been knocked down, and there's these metal beams holding it up as this, and like this kind of almost folded hand kind of fashion, and it all adds to this kind of feeling that, you know, I guess like one of the things that horror films, a lot of people have kind of theorized about horror films, is that most of this genre is kind of about how you cannot escape, you know, your fate, and you cannot really escape death. And that is something that is really well done in The Evil Dead. Like, I noticed that a lot of the characters, I think maybe you hear it 2 or 3 times, it's that they say that the setting won't let us leave, you know? And it almost feels like that this, once they have kind of arrived to this cabin, like there is no way for them to get out of it. Like, it may be defined by its beheadings and its gore and shit, but I think that what really adds to the terror is that kind of sense that these characters aren't going to escape. They can't, they physically cannot escape what's happening around them, you know?
I think, and the thing is, you know, we've talked about at the start of this episode how it's kind of been very influential. You see the impact that aspect of the film has had, if you've seen Joss Whedon's Cabin in the Woods this year. You know, that was, I mean, I know there's a lot of homage to different horror films, and you know, there's obvious homage to Evil Dead, but I think the sense that it tries to sort of incorporate, because I'm pretty sure from what I remember that film, it incorporates like a force field around them, so it kind of shows how simple ideas like that can carry on and take on new forms, and you know, I find that kind of impressive.
It is. It's very impressive, and it's cool that you mentioned Cabin in the Woods because, of course, that is a huge. I mean, Evil Dead has had a huge influence on that film and many other films, really. I mean, as far as how influential horror films are, I think Evil Dead, like I said at the start of this episode, is among the most. I mean, that kind of onset confrontation plot where the characters are thrust into this isolated environment and, you know, discover the working of something evil and become its targets, like done before. We talked about Alien in our inaugural film club podcast, and that is something that did a similar thing. But Evil Dead almost feels like it kind of defines that genre of filmmaking, and I th because of maybe its visual style or the way that Sam Raimi tells it. I don't know, but it is like you said, a very, very influential horror film.
It is. I just like it a lot. I mean, I honestly, I don't know what much more to say. There's something I found that was quite interesting. You know how I did like a link from Requiem to A Dream to Spider-Man last time.
Oh yeah.
I have another little strange movie link that I've noticed. In the actual book that is used, the Book of the Dead, the Necronomicon, which kids, if you ever find one of those, never read it. Not even in your head. Just, you know, put it back in the box and go read something much nicer. Trust me. There's bad things will happen. One of the sketches in the Necronomicon is actually like based very heavily on the William Blake painting, The Great Red Dragon and the Woman Clothed with the Sun, which of course was the main inspiration for Ralph Fiennes' character in Red Dragon. That's what it, that painting, that William Blake painting, made him all, well, I don't think it made him all crazy, but it was his inspiration to become the dragon, which I felt was quite interesting.
That's kind of cool. That is kind of cool. Actually, I'm interested to know, Mal, what is your favorite Evil Dead film? Because there are three in the Evil Dead
There
trilogy,
is.
and I have heard people say all three, like different answers as their favorite film. And I want to know which one is yours. Is it Evil Dead 1 or 2 or Army of Darkness?
Don't get me wrong, I like Army of Darkness, but I think because it's just so radically different and it kind of takes you out of that universe quite literally, I would go with 2.
Good choice. That's exactly what I was going to say.
I like 2 because it kind of... This is the thing, and this is something you don't see very often with sequels, is it manages to take what was good about the first film and kind of amplify it, but it doesn't feel like it's... bashing you over the head with the same stuff. You know, it throws in a new mechanic here and there, and it kind of takes it to a different place. And, you know, it amps it up without it being a film which leaves you with the feeling like, oh, God, this is just the same thing. It's the opposite of The Hangover 2, basically. You know, it manages to use a lot of the same materials, but it does it in a way which doesn't feel like you're being ripped off and you might as well watch the original.
Exactly. The Evil Dead 2 is actually my favourite trilogy too, and I like it because, like you said, I mean, it manages to do everything that Evil Dead did, but in the way that Sam Raimi was kind of playful in The Evil Dead, I think he sort of puts his tongue very firmly in his cheek for the second one, and doesn't just kind of make a playful film, but make a film that's kind of, he makes a film that's really kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't say ridiculous, but very overblown. Kind of hammers the kind of fun factor into it. And I think, you know, I think as much as The Evil Dead does that to some extent, I think The Evil Dead 2 does it, like, a lot more successfully. Not to say that The Evil Dead is any less worthy as a film, but I think The Evil Dead 2 is probably my favourite of the trilogy, though I like them all. It's one of the very few trilogies where I'd say that all three are actually very, very good movies.
Well, with 2, you kind of get the sense that because, you know, he's kind of got the recognition from the first film, it's kind of like he can do a few of the things that he, you know, maybe budget or location or just practicality wouldn't allow him to do in the first one. And he kind of takes the ideas and builds on them to crazy new heights. I mean, it does get kind of crazy, but you kind of embrace the crazy, you know.
Exactly, the crazy is kind of fun in it, really.
It's a whole lot of fun.
It is a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, so there you go. I mean, unless you've got anything else you want to add, I mean, I think we've covered Evil Dead pretty well, though.
I think we did a really good job of covering Evil Dead. Yeah, it's just, it's for anyone that has maybe seen it for the first time, I think that The Evil Dead is, this is one of those strange things where it's a very simple film and very straightforward, but I think the more that you watch it, the more that you can appreciate, you know, just how many films that you have seen from this generation, you know, have such a debt to Otis Sam Raimi.
Yeah.
For what he did with that film on such a low budget and with such kind of very basic aesthetics. And, you know, I just think it's a really influential, very well-made horror film that I think will stand the test of time, even if it dates while it doesn't, ironically enough.
I think the thing is, I think it's one of those films that doesn't have to worry about dating, because I think the older it gets, I think the more widespread appeal it's going to get. You know, it's interesting to think that people are just it's interesting to think this with any film that we cover, really, that for some people a lot of these films are going to be firsts for people, and it's kind of nice to think that somewhere this is the first watching for The Evil Dead for someone. And now, if they like it, they can go and spread the word like it was done back in the day before we had the internet and such.
Absolutely, absolutely.
There we go, Evil Dead. Make sure to let us know what you thought, if indeed you did watch it for the very first time, or perhaps you are a habitual watcher of The Evil Dead that just likes to return to it and indulge in all the sick, crazy, gross, creepy magic it offers. You can do so by leaving comments in the show notes at screeninvasion.com, or if you want to get involved with us on a long term, if you want to be in it for the long haul, which we'd love you to be, you can head over to Screen Invasion's page on Facebook. And if you see near the top, you'll find the film club forums where you can go on, introduce yourself, tell us what films you like, and tell us what you thought of The Evil Dead. But it's time to move on and see what we're going to be indulging in this next week. I'm very excited. I've been wondering what Dan's going to be picking this week, and I'm very excited. I'm chomping at the bit to see what our next film is going to be.
Well, hopefully I have a good one for you. I mean, it's taken me a little while to decide what I should choose. Hopefully it's going to be an interesting one. Because so far in Film Club, I suggested that we did Alien. Mal, you suggested we did Requiem for a Dream. And then the listeners suggested this week that we do The Evil Dead. And so far we've had a terrifying film, we've had a pretty harrowing film, and then obviously this week we've had a very gory film. So I figured, it's time for maybe something a little bit more lighthearted. And not
Oh
only
no,
that, like,
hang on now, because listeners to the podcast will be thinking, "Oh, we know what Dan's taste in light-hearted films are."
hey, I have a good taste in lighthearted films. I
Okay.
just don't tend to see them that often. That's my problem. But also, I mean, it's not just like the fact that it's lighthearted as well. I mean, we've done three very popular films so far, and so I think it's time to throw a little bit of a curveball out there as well and do something that people may not have watched before. Because I mean, after all, Film Club isn't just about discussing movies; it's also about discovering them.
Exactly.
And it's a well-liked film. It's popular, but not a classic in the way that the three previous choices have been. So the film I've chose this week is a film that's made by probably one of the best filmmakers in our generation, who, with this movie, made this very surprising foray into the romantic comedy genre. And it's a very different genre to what he has worked in since that film and worked in prior to that film. But don't get me wrong, it is not your typical romantic comedy. No way. It almost feels offensive, actually, to use that to describe the film because it is so expertly made and full of symbolism and metaphor and offers so much to analyze. Honestly, I don't know how we're going to be able to do next week's podcast in a couple in like 30 minutes. It's a movie that basically attempts to take something that's been stereotyped as being kind of fluffy and like meaningless and dumb and do something that's pretty much the total polar opposite of it and give it like depth and intelligence and stuff. So the film that I've chose for next week's film club is Paul Thomas Anderson's Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
I
The
didn't
film.
see that coming at all. I was trying to guess as you're talking about it. I was like, who is he talking about? Someone has done a rom-com in the middle of a very different amount. I was like, I can't picture who this is, but that makes perfect sense. And I've only seen it the once, and that was years ago.
What did you think of it? Did you like it at all?
I liked it, but I can't remember that much about it, to be honest. I think I
Oh,
was
well,
kind
hopefully
of.
this will be a good hopefully this will be a good chance for you to go back and discover some new things about it then.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I remember being very kind of middle of the road about it, if I remember rightly. So yeah, I'm very excited to go back to that.
Oh, then this could be a really interesting one. For those of you who don't know, this is the film a film that was made in, I think it was 2005, from the director of There Will Be Blood and Magnolia, Boogie Nights, who's making The Master later this year. It stars Adam Sandler in one of his very rare good roles,
Yeah.
as well as Emily Watson's in the film too, and Philip Seymour Hoffman. So yeah, go grab yourself a copy, seek it out, and drop us a line on the Screen Invasion Facebook page or the comment section or Screen Invasion's Twitter. And if you get a chance to watch it, tell us what you think.
Exactly. I'm really looking forward to that now, actually.
Oh, I hope that it's a good choice because it's a very funny film. And I distinctly remember a lot of moments where I laughed out loud during it as well. But I mean, some of the use of color and editing, cinematography, and some of the theoretical kind of stuff that you can get into about the film is really, really interesting. And if you do a quick Google search, there is so many different kind of theories about what Punch Drunk Love is about, and
Oh.
how Paul Thomas Anderson has used different effects in his camera work and in his editing and stuff like that in order to create it. And so I think it's a film that offers a lot to talk about, as well as being a lot of fun and very entertaining. So hopefully it'll be a good watch for you and all our listeners next week.
I have no doubt that it will be. I'm very, very keen and very interested to go back and check that out. Excellent pick. And a total, like you said, a total curveball. Did not see that coming. Did not see that coming at all. But there you go, Punch Drunk Love. And you just, I don't know if you can get any much more different going from The Evil Dead to Punch Drunk Love. But that's the beauty of Film Club, is that you can go from one to the other so swiftly and with ease.
Exactly. Maybe next week we'll do like Love Actually or something. Who knows? It could be really out of the blue.
Steady on now. Don't get carried
Yeah,
away.
I know. I'm sorry, I went a little too far though.
I know. Come on now. pull yourself together. So there you go, Punch Drunk Love. Make sure to go watch it. Let us know what you think of Evil Dead if you've seen it. If you haven't, you might want to go back and watch it and then come back and tell us what you think. But get yourself a copy of Punch Drunk Love, which I believe is pretty widely available in a lot of places.
I'm sure it is, yeah. It's available in most film stores or most good kind of chain entertainment stores. You'll definitely be able to find it.
I imagine it's definitely on Netflix somewhere if you've got Netflix.
And I'm sure, absolutely.
And if you haven't, and I'm not getting any commission from Netflix for saying this, although Netflix, if you're listening and you want to sponsor us, we are more than welcome to that suggestion.
Hey, that'd be good. That'd be amazing if we could do that.
I know. Someone, get in touch with Netflix. Tell them that we're looking for sponsorship. But if you haven't and you want to carry on doing Film Club with us, I would say definitely maybe think about investing in it because there is a good, healthy amount of stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Check that out. And, of course, leave your comments. Screeninvasion.com's show notes for this episode. And, of course, over at the Film Club forums on Screen Invasion's page over at Facebook. And of course we are now on iTunes as well, so go subscribe, that way you get episodes delivered right to your MP3 player each and every week. And of course, if you like what you've heard, don't forget to give us a rating and maybe even a review if you're feeling
oh
nice.
That'd be nice.
It would be nice, yeah, if you give us
that'd
some
be
reviews.
Lovely. I'd like a review,
yeah, and we could read them out on air. So there you go. That's an incentive for you right there. But other than that, you know, if you're going to go out in the woods, just be careful, you know, because there's evil things lurking everywhere. Until next week, go enjoy Punch Drunk Love, and we will see you here next time.